shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
What does great pizza and ice-cold beer have in common? Charlotte's Tap House and Mobile Catering, of course. Charlotte's Pizza, pasta, and more made from scratch with old family recipes using only the finest ingredients. Charlotte's will not disappoint when you bite into the bacon spicy mambo pizza. Get ready for an experience you won't find anywhere else. Call Charlotte's today to book their patio for your next birthday, baby shower, anniversary, or any other private party. Remember, everything is homemade using secret family recipes. Be sure to try their famous sundial steak salad with perfectly grilled steak tossed in their homemade tomato vinaigrette dressing. Charlotte's Tap House, your ultimate beer experience. Charlotte's Tap House rule number one, come for the homemade pizza, stay for the beer wall. Charlotte's Tap House rule number two, never stay empty-handed. Charlotte's Tap House and Mobile Catering in two locations, Anderson Outlets and in Reading at the corner of Shasta and East Streets. Charlotte's Tap House for dine-in, takeout, or delivery. Ask about booking their patio for your next private event. Charlotte's Tap House, bringing family and friends together.
Are you new to crypto? It can leave you feeling unsure of what to do. Help is available. From getting started to securing your cryptos, you don't need to go it alone. Bitcoin 530 will take you by the hand to help you move forward with your crypto journey. Schedule a free consultation with Bitcoin 530 at bitcoin530.io or give them a call at 530-324-5175. That's bitcoin530.io.
I'm celebrating local heroes. Tune in the second Thursday each month at 6.05 p.m. right after the news for Heroes of the North State on North State Now. I'm Michelle Slade. During North State Now, we will speak with your neighbors, friends, family, and community members who give back, not to be recognized, but because it's the right thing to do. During these conversations, we will learn what truly makes our community and the people in it. Join me the second Thursday of each month at 6.05 p.m., right after the news, for Heroes of the North State on North State Now.
The official meeting of the Business to Business meeting is called to order. Business to Business, where we always say, make every transaction a win-win-win. Our guest today is Steve Clark from Minuteman Press of Reading.
Today I'd like to talk to you about business cards.
I just get mine from this.
Don't say it. Don't do it. If you're thinking of ordering your business cards online, don't do it. Keep your business local.
But they're cheaper online.
No, business cards from Minuteman Press of Reading start at just $35, and custom design services start at $29, and you keep your money local.
Hey, that's a win!
Let us at Minuteman Press of Reading take care of your business cards. Rapid turnaround time and priced right. We also do full-service direct mail and promotional products at Minuteman Press of Reading.
Call 221-0400. That's 221-0400.
For Minuteman Press of Reading, where we design, print, and promote you.
221-0400. That's 221-0400.
Minuteman Press of Reading. Call today.
Hi, this is Judy Maxwell. Life can happen in an instant. Sometimes you plan for it, like retirement or taking care of your family. Sometimes it's a surprise, like a winter storm with home or property damage. Sometimes it may be an unexpected accident or illness or even a premature death. Whatever life throws at you, you'll wish you had gotten the right insurance when you had the chance. That's where Maxwell Insurance can help. For more than a quarter century, we've been serving the North State because it's our home, too. Give us a call at 221-0441 to let us help you review your policies and prepare you for whatever your future holds. Maxwell Insurance, 1378 Hilltop Drive, 221-0441.
Hi, this is Matt with Liberty Unabashed. It's time to embrace American values. Our society is based on the freedom, not begging the government for permission. It's time to wake up, my brothers and sisters. Come check out my show every other Sunday, 8 to 9, Liberty Unabashed.
Do you have something you'd like to get painted? Then bring it to Victory Powder Coating. Powder coating is a durable, colorful, environmentally friendly alternative to paint. It's useful in automotive, agricultural, decorative, and high-temperature applications. Victory Powder Coating has become the North State leader in powder coating applications and metal finishing. They specialize in large industrial items like truck beds, agricultural equipment, and trailers. They're dedicated to providing superior work and outstanding customer care. Consider Victory Powder Coating for your next project. Victory Powder Coating.
Slow down. Hi, this is Dr. Trudy Pratt. My chiropractic and nutrition practice in downtown Reading has been helping people feel better for over 20 years. We pride ourselves in really listening to our patients and then tailoring a program of nutrition, chiropractic care, massage, and exercise that's just right for you. The results can be dramatic. Call 244-7873. That's 244-7873. Thank you.
I'm celebrating local heroes. Tune in the second Thursday each month at 6.05 p.m. right after the news for Heroes of the North State on North State Now. I'm Michelle Slade. During North State Now, we will speak with your neighbors, friends, family, and community members who give back, not to be recognized, but because it's the right thing to do. During these conversations, we will learn what truly makes our community and the people in it. Join me the second Thursday of each month at 6.05 p.m., right after the news, for Heroes of the North State on North State Now.
At Shasta Regional Medical Center, we're specialists in emergency care with the experience and training to deliver expert diagnosis and treatment to all emergency patients. Shasta Regional Medical Center is certified as an advanced primary stroke facility and is one of the nation's 50 top cardiovascular hospitals and is a fully accredited chest pain center. In an emergency when every minute has meaning and every second counts, choose Shasta Regional Medical Center, your choice for emergency care. Shasta Regional Medical Center, caring for our community when minutes matter.
It's a bright new day. The sun is shining, the birds are singing, and there's never been a better day to try Mount Shasta spring water. Hi, I'm Bob the Drop. I come from a protected spring at the base of Mount Shasta. I'm bottled at the source. It doesn't get more cool and refreshing than that, and it's delivered right to your door. Yep, pure and simple, naturally the best. Start your bright new day by calling 1-800-922-6227 to order some of the best tasting water on the planet, Mount Shasta spring water.
Cinerama presents Brews by the Bridge at Turtle Bay Exploration Park on Friday, June 17th. Join us at the Sundial Bridge for craft beers, live music, food, games, and much more. Tickets are on sale now and include commemorative steel cup and your first beer free. $30 for pre-sale and Turtle Bay members and $35 at the gate for this 21 and over event. All proceeds go to Turtle Bay education programs and exhibitions. Brews by the Bridge at Turtle Bay, Friday, June 17th. Get your tickets today and learn more at turtlebay.org.
Now is a great time to prepare for this year's upcoming wildfire season. Reading Electric Utility and City of Reading staff are busy clearing vegetation to mitigate wildfire risk to our facilities and to the community. You can also prepare by trimming back shrubs and tree branches that are closer than 5 feet from your home, clear debris from your roof and gutters, and clear dead vegetation on your property. For information about tree trimming and proximity of power lines, call 530-224-4356. We all need to work together to prevent wildfires in our community.
Hi, this is Chuck Kenny with Shasta Gas Propane. It's been a while since I've cut a new radio spot, but I feel I need to issue a warning about energy prices during this fall-winter of 2021 and 22. Just as Obama said after he was elected, elections have consequences. This winter, our country will suffer some of the consequences of the last election. I'm not a politician, but I am a businessman, and many of the decisions of this current administration will drastically affect energy prices this winter and going forward. Already we are experiencing record high propane costs and prices. Remember, our motto at Shasta Gas Propane is, our customers are warm friends. We will treat you like friends this winter and do our best to help you through this high price winter. Give us a call at 365-3793. That's 365-3793.
Hey, KCNR listeners, it's Nathan with the Reading Civic Auditorium. Have you been to ReadingCivic.com lately? I want to shout out huge thanks to all of our patrons throughout the North State who buy tickets to our shows and attend the valuable community events that happen in the auditorium every year. These past 10 years of momentum have been absolutely incredible. Thanks to all of you. Your support and confidence in Advance Reading has made the impossible possible. As a community who knows how to pull together and show ourselves strong, we have successfully attracted high-quality entertainers and major concert promoters back into the building and put your Reading Civic Auditorium on the map once again. Arts and entertainment culture is thriving, and we have much to celebrate. Never miss a show again. Visit ReadingCivic.com and sign up for our emails for exclusive pre-sale access. We have an unbelievable lineup with new shows being added all the time. Hit ReadingCivic.com today. You'll be glad you did. Shows are always more fun at the Civic.
Riverfront Playhouse presents Proof by David Auburn and directed by Samantha Fork, June 3rd through June 18th. Proof is the story of a young woman who has been spending the last few years caring for her brilliant but unstable father. Proof explores loss, love, genius, mental illness, fear, trust, relationships, and the breaking points we push each other to. Tickets available at riverfrontplayhouse.net. Enjoy the store reading and at the door. Riverfront Playhouse presents Proof, June 3rd through June 18th. Sponsored by this station and other amazing sponsors.
Hi, this is Brian Martin, General Manager of River Common Senior Living. One of the most rewarding things about what I do is watching the positive transformation that often occurs when a senior moves here to our beautiful, independent retirement community. Seniors can become isolated, find it hard to eat good, healthy meals, and even just get around. I call this a failure to thrive. At River Commons, we solve those challenges. You are surrounded by friendly people with similar life experiences. Chef Shalisa and her crew provide three delicious and healthy meals daily. Activities Director Ernie always has a wide variety of things to do, from arts and crafts to outings on our 25-passenger bus. Plus, we provide utilities, cable TV, scheduled transportation, weekly housekeeping, and more. We see seniors go from survive to thrive, and that is just a wonderful thing. Call today for a tour or luncheon a tour and experience River Commons for yourself. 221-2121 or on the web river-commons.com.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wayne Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
ACA, come out and play. Have you seen the bill we all have to pay? The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson state of mind.
By reading a lot of novels in a variety of genres and asking questions, it's possible to learn how things are done, the mechanics of writing, so to speak, and which genres and authors excel in various areas. Nicholas Sparks.
You're listening to Writing Roots, brought to you by Aspen House Publishing.
Welcome to Writing Roots. I'm Lee Hull.
And I'm Lee Esses.
Our question for today in our continued Frequently Asked Questions series is, how do you know which genre your book is in?
See, the book I'm writing right now has magic, but it also takes place on Earth, and some of the problems are solved by a character falling in love, and most of the stuff that happens is action-based, where people are sword fighting and trying to kill each other. So is it fantasy? Is it historical? Is it romance? Or is it action-adventure?
Swords and sorcery.
Which is a subcategory of
fantasy. Which is a subcategory of speculative fiction.
Which is a subcategory of fiction.
So, as you can see, there is a lot of things in genre. But there are a couple of questions that you can ask yourself to help you narrow down what genre your book is in.
Before we get into that, I want to make sure you, our audience, knows why this question is important. Well, I'm not asking this question. I know what genre my book is in. Or I don't care what genre my book is in. It's very dangerous for people who want to be career authors. If all you are doing is writing selfishly, you don't have to worry about genre. You have fun. We'll see you next episode. But if you ever want to sell any of your books, understanding your genre, understanding which shelf the bookstore puts it on, helps sell your book. Because if I am looking for an action-adventure novel and I have to sift through cookbooks, then I am not going to be as interested.
So if you want to know why you need to know, go back in our archives and search for target audience. We've talked about that before in an episode, I believe, in July. You can also look at our series from last March when we talked specifically about genres. We covered the basic ones, some of the specifics of, you know, cover design and plot of each of those. Today, though, we're not focusing on those aspects. We're just focusing on how to figure out what genre you're in.
Yeah, if you don't know which of March's episodes to look at to make sure it applies to your book, this is the right episode to start on.
So what is the first question that you need to ask yourself in order to figure out what genre you're in?
Is my book fiction or nonfiction? Fiction is defined as more or less false. Something that did not happen, you are not trying to convince anybody that it did happen. I am not trying to convince anybody that there is a conspiracy of vigilantes in my hometown. Nobody is trying to be sold on that idea. But if there were, here's a fun story that surrounds them. Nonfiction would be more of your self-help, your biography.
Memoirs. So if it actually happened, or if it's almost all based on true story, you are writing nonfiction. If you are writing fantastical things that you made up in your head, or things that are loosely based on what actually happened, you are writing fiction.
Technically, fairy tales and allegories fall into the fiction category. Those are the ones that you want people to understand and think about, but they aren't something that actually happened.
A sub-question of fiction or nonfiction is, what's the age range of the book? Are you writing for children? Are you writing for middle grade? Are you writing for young adults? Are you writing for adults?
Understanding that helps the bookstore put the book in the right location. Because if I'm writing about cats that all have this secret life after they leave the house in the morning, they go out and have adventures and then they come back home and then sleep in their beds, your kids might love that story.
Your adults, not so much.
They're not going to be as intrigued, mostly because the stakes aren't terribly high. It's a cat.
So the fun thing with age range is it becomes more vague the older you get. Because you have adults who like to read YA. But you don't have many, you know, 5-year-olds who like to read Tolkien.
Yeah, I think it was Lewis who said, anybody can write a book targeted for adults, but it takes a specially skilled author to write something for children.
Yes. So look at that, then move on to your next questions.
The next big question you have to ask yourself is, when and where is your book set? So if your book is set in Redding, California, in the year 2020, okay, we've eliminated a whole bunch of genre by saying that particular information. We know it's probably not going to be fantasy, might be urban fantasy. We know it's not likely to be sci-fi, it's not likely to be a western.
It's definitely not going to be historical.
If it takes place in the near future on Mars, understanding the setting, the location, will tell you it's going to be probably a hard science sci-fi.
It could be a soft science sci-fi, but definitely sci-fi.
If it's in the near future, more often than not, it's hard science. If it was a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away,
it's fantasy sci-fi.
Yep. The softest of sci-fis.
So sometimes people can get a little bit confused about the fantasy and the sci-fi here, because the where isn't so different. The location could be a completely fictional place, a planet somewhere that doesn't exist, that things happen on that planet. So the difference of where with fantasy and sci-fi isn't so different. It's whether it's magical and problems are solved with magic, or whether it's technological and problems are solved with technology. And that goes into our next question, is what's the problem?
We've mentioned before, a story is a problem and its solution. If you don't know what the problem of your story is,
you don't have a story.
Your story should have both an internal and an external problem, if you're following the hero's journey map. But if the story is, my character is lonely, and then at the end they fall in love. That's going to tell you about the genre that I'm writing. If the character is in danger and they find safety at the end, that's going to tell you about the genre that I'm writing. That's clearly an adventure story. We are talking about the main big problem in your story. This is how you define your genre.
Subplots are different. You can have a fantasy novel with a romance subplot, but your actual genre is the main problem, which is the world is ending. And they happen to fall in love in the process, so it's romance subplot subgenre.
But the world ending is the problem that's being solved. Understanding this about your own book will help you define the final elements of your genre.
So let's look at some very specific genres. So you have the main headers. You have fiction. Under that you have fantasy, romance, sci-fi, action, thriller, horror, suspense, mystery, young adult.
Basically everything except for a nonfiction episode in March.
But you have smaller genres in that, subcategories of every single one of these that can really help you hone in on your target audience to make sure you're finding the right ones. Go to Amazon. This list is huge.
So for our notes, I figured, okay, well, because Amazon is one of the world's largest book retailers, I would go and see what their lists are, what their genres are. I just pulled from the fiction section because most of our audience are fiction authors in some way. We have 3 pages of different kinds of genre and some of the subcategories under that would still be your main genre. So Toxic, your book, is
technically mystery is its main genre and it has a couple of subcategories. I've actually realized it's not so cozy because it's less humorous than most other cozy mysteries. You definitely have the woman sleuths. You have a little bit of the cozy mystery because cozy mysteries have the amateur sleuth aspect. The main character usually has a hobby or a profession that isn't actually police related. So it's cozy mystery, it's woman sleuths, it's general mystery.
You have a little bit of crime in there also, I think, because you do have the law enforcement character.
That is true.
I would put crime as sort of a subgenre because he is not the one solving the mystery. He is there to kind of help out and arrest the bad guys when the time comes. Okay, and give her a place that's fairly safe when she's being stalked by a psycho serial spree killer.
And that's the other subgenre of mine. Is romance. I do have a clean romance subcategory, subgenre in Toxic.
So my current work in progress would fall under the alternative history, and then probably historical fantasy would be my second category in that. Because it takes place on Earth in the year 1521. It has stuff happening that you can reference in other books in fact-based around that time period. But it's clearly not something that actually happened. Magic is involved. Alternate history.
Just to throw out some other genres, subgenres, you have the coming-of-age stories that are very popular in the younger YA groups. In romance, you have anything from contemporary to paranormal to rom-coms to Western romances.
So if you want to look up this list, it's massive. I don't think we need to put it on the landing page. You can find it on Amazon and all of their books. And if you are looking for more books like yours, trying to figure out what the cover style is, who to connect with, which ones are selling well, searching your genre in any bookseller will help inform you about what the audiences are looking for in that genre.
Amazon also has a lot of tips for how to select your genre. The biggest thing is be accurate. As specific and accurate as you can get, the better off you're going to be.
Because honestly, if I'm looking for a book about some guy who's kicking butt and taking names and dispensing justice that the law can't. I don't want to find your Christian allegory in that collection. So if you're writing a Christian allegory, don't check every box. Amazon won't let you anyway. But if you check every box, because then you'll show up on every list, you're going to get the wrong kind of reader. The next that goes along with be accurate is be specific. The more you can pinpoint exactly what kind of genre you are, the better off you can be, and the smaller the list you'll appear on, so you're going to appear highest to the top.
And then don't be redundant. When you are selecting those subcategories, you don't need to pick fantasy historical and simply fantasy. Either go all the way down the rest of that line to a different subcategory.
Be specific.
Or don't do it at all. So let's go through this process, kind of helping walk you through how to figure out your genre. I'm going to think of a book, and Lee is going to ask me those questions and guess what category it's in.
So just a quick recap, fiction and nonfiction. What's your setting? What's the problem? So you're thinking of a book. I'm doing my David Copperfield fingers where I'm reading your mind. Is your book fiction or nonfiction?
Fiction. I don't really read nonfiction.
What is the target age range for your book?
YA.
Where is it set?
Kind of a complicated question. Different world, but is connected with ours.
Is it set anywhere in our timeline?
Yes.
When?
Modern.
What is the character's problem that they're solving?
Defeat the Witch of the Waste.
So we have fiction, YA, alternate reality to now, defeating the bad guy. So that sounds like an urban fantasy to me.
Kind of. It's not our world, it's connected to our world.
Okay, what is it?
I would call it more contemporary fantasy than urban fantasy, because urban fantasy tends to be your werewolves, vampires, that kind of thing. This is part of its modern time, but it has the very fantasy feel to it. So for those of you who are wondering, I was thinking of the book Howl's Moving Castle, where they live in a place called Ingerie, which is kind of like a different world England, but there's a connection to modern-day Wales. Now we're flipping this. I am asking the questions. She has a book in mind, and I'm going to see if I can guess what genre it's in. Specific genre, not just, hey, yeah, that sounds like fantasy. So, fiction or nonfiction?
Fiction.
Age range?
New adult.
Setting?
English countryside.
When is it?
About the year 1800.
What's the problem?
She needs to get married to save her family.
Alternate history.
Not that one. I know which one you're thinking of. It's not that one. That's the Scottish countryside, dear.
No, I was thinking Pride and Prejudice and zombies.
I didn't have the zombies in there, but yes, Pride and Prejudice.
Okay.
I thought you were thinking Outlander. That's a different one.
No, different countryside. You said 1800s, but it was like save the family, and my head went to, yep, definitely zombies.
I'm okay with that.
So the actual category for Pride and Prejudice would be historical romance. Not historical at the time it was written, but for us today, definitely historical romance.
So with these questions being answered, you should be able to put your book in a category. I'm not suggesting you put your book in a box. I'm not suggesting you don't color outside the lines, because it would be really boring to just churn out these formulaic stories. Understanding your book is about connecting to your audience and helping your audience find you.
Knowing the genre is a marketing tool. If you want people to read your book, they need to know about it. And they can't know about it if you're searching in the wrong places.
But on your first draft, when you're still discovering each of those elements and how you interact with your characters and how your characters interact with the world and how problems get solved, it's more important than even knowing what genre you're writing in to just
write selfishly.
If you have a question or comment for our hosts or a topic you'd like us to cover, send us an email at writingroots@aspenhousepublishing.com or find us on Facebook by searching for Aspen House Publishing.
Then Goliath, a Philistine champion from Gath, came out of the Philistine ranks to face the forces of Israel. He was over 9 feet tall. He wore a bronze helmet, and his bronze coat of mail weighed 125 pounds. 1 Samuel chapter 17.
You're listening to Writing Roots, brought to you by Aspen House Publishing.
Welcome to Writing Roots. I'm Lee Hull.
And I'm Lee Essis. And today we are talking about basically just people, but magically bigger people.
That would be the giants. Now, we're not talking about Andre the Giant, giants, not people who are just incredibly tall. We are talking about actual mythical creatures, legends, tales of races of tall people.
Across the world, a lot of cultures show tall people as powerful people. I believe there are two different Shinto emperors who are reported to have been more than 10 feet tall. So at first sight, if your hero is encountering a giant, they can be very intimidated without even talking to or encountering physically.
So when we're talking about these mythical giants, the biggest thing about them in most legends is that they're basically people, but big. They are sometimes slower, less intelligent, but always strong.
And I've found cannibalism is something that we see a lot of, or at least eating humans in some way. You know, grind your bones for bread kind of a mantra. We see that in a couple of different giant stories around the world.
I have a hard time siding with Jack on the Jack and the Beanstalk story. What would you do if somebody invaded your house and stole your stuff?
Probably exactly the same thing.
So let's get into some examples of giant or large, intimidating, strong creatures. Of course, you have your trolls and your ogres and your orcs.
A lot of the references to giants are an alternate race, similar to elves and dwarves, where they are human-like, but not. They aren't exactly gods. They aren't demonic in any way. They're mostly just a different kind of people.
In Norse mythology, you have the Jotuns.
And to be clear, the Avengers mythology as well.
Of course, the frost giants from Jotunheim are very based on this race of giants in Norse mythology.
There was a carving that was dated to about the 10th century AD of, I'm not going to try to pronounce her name because I'm going to butcher it, but one of the Jotun riding a dog, like a horse, might have been a wolf. And she had like reins on it, but the reins were made of snakes. It was a very interesting depiction of, because most of the time when we see giants, we don't see them using tools in that kind of a sophisticated way. It's mostly like a club and smash Harry Potter in the bathroom. And of course, heading south to the Middle East, the Judeo-Christian history, we have the Philistines, which our opener was referencing, these gigantic warrior-type people.
Even if you aren't super familiar with the Judeo-Christian beliefs, you likely have heard the term Goliath. You've heard that and know that it references a giant, a huge human that is not easily defeated. So if we want to go down under to Australia, there is an oral tradition of a giant known as Crooked Mick.
If you're listening from the U.S., you probably know who Paul Bunyan is. Crooked Mick is like Paul Bunyan, but cooler. Not only does he like chop down stuff and shear sheep and such, but he makes great pies, apparently.
Not only are his pies good, but they are light, so light that a gust of wind can carry them away. And not only are pies getting carried away, if he kicks a crocodile, he can send it to the moon. I love this.
And it's just so much fun that you've just got this, like, Australian bushman that's going out there kicking crocodiles and baking pies.
So you want to look that one up? That's Crooked Mick.
And then, of course, you have a giant that is super familiar because of its prominence in Greek and Roman tradition, and that's the Cyclops.
He's also familiar because he's the dude with one eye. Which is interesting because most of the depictions I see of the Cyclops, he has the holes in the face in a normal where humans would have eyes, but they're just sort of skinned over, and then he has a third eye at the top of the center of the forehead. I always thought that was weird. It wasn't like they were, like, merged, you know?
I'm just picturing the Cyclops and Hercules, the Disney animated version, where it's just, like, one big eye that's, like, half his face in the middle of his forehead. He has a very tall forehead as a result.
Most of the ones we've talked about so far are enemies of humans in some way.
Except for Crooked Mick. He's saving them from the crocodiles.
Okay, that's fair. I am talking about the Gentile, I believe it's pronounced. These are a race of giants found in the northern parts of Spain, close to where it meets France in that little bay there. They existed and they basically just hung out with the humans, and they were really known for their ability to throw rocks, and that's how a bunch of little islands off the coast were formed. But they were said to have lived alongside the Basque people at one point.
They were also said to have invented metallurgy, the saw, and grew the first wheat, and then taught the humans how to farm.
Most of them disappeared when the comet flew across the sky around the same time that Christ was born. That was sort of a harbinger for them to go, okay, it's bedtime, and they basically just went and lived under a mountain. And of a lot of the giants we find, these ones are furry. They're hairier until we get into more modern mythology and cryptozoology.
Fun cryptozoology. If we want to go a little coastal islander, in Fijian mythology, there is a giant who is so large that his teeth looked like they were burning logs. And that is why his name is Flaming Teeth.
So he basically tortured the humans in the village for so long that a bunch of warriors went, lured him under a big rock, and then pushed it over on him. He died, and his teeth were brought back to the village, which brought fire to the humans.
Fascinating. And then if we go to Eastern Asian cultures and mythologies, the Hindu and Buddhist cultures have the Rakshasas, and they were depicted as shape-shifting, fierce-looking, enormous creatures with two fangs that protruded from the top of their mouth.
They have a lot of similarities between them and a lot of the vampire mythology. The shape-shifting, the eating people, needing to be invited into a building. These are all Rakshasa tropes that also appear with vampires, which we'll talk about in three episodes.
Yes.
These ones are a little strange because I didn't necessarily want to put shapeshifters in with giants because giants are naturally large creatures, and these ones can appear humanoid, but they are described as giant, larger than, scarier than humans, and with a lot more magical abilities than most giants we're going to see. And again, eating people is a thing.
So let's look into the literature and references to giants in fiction as we know it today in modern ages.
Of course, from Jonathan Swift's Gulliver's Travels, we have the Brobdingnag, which is a giant, and opposite the Lilliputians, which are the tiny people we talked about a couple episodes ago.
And Gulliver's like the normal-sized person in the middle?
Yep.
Okay.
But if you're younger and you're looking for it, Roald Dahl has the BFG.
Big Friendly Giant. One of my favorites is actually Fezzik from The Princess Bride. Absolutely love him. So great. And then the classic example, the Cyclops from Odyssey.
And the last one I just want to touch on because I think this is how most people are familiar with giants and trolls and half-giants and such, is Harry Potter. We see trolls in the first book, and then one of the closest friends of the main characters is half-giant.
Yeah, and in Harry Potter, the half-giants are especially considered, looked down on as lesser beings because of their mixed race.
So if I'm being plagued by a giant, how do I take it down?
Just make them fall over.
Okay. Crushing under their own weight. We see this a couple of different ways. We see that, of course, in Mickey Mouse had some of that. And I think the most classic version is Jack and the Beanstalk.
When he makes the giant fall off the beanstalk, chops it down while the giant's climbing down. Another thing when it comes to giants is the eyes tend to be vulnerable, especially with your cyclopses.
And I believe that's how the hero actually defeated the cyclops, was he drove a spear or a lance into the cyclops' eye.
And in general, you deal with a giant the same way you would deal with a human. They're stronger, they're bigger, but they have the same kind of vulnerabilities. Their anatomy is generally the same.
Of course, you could go with the Princess Bride logic and the Fijian logic.
The moment his head is in view, hit it with a rock!
Seem to work for them. They have fire. And in general, most of the time, you're going to see your heroes be smarter and more agile than your giants.
D&D stats, they have better dexterity.
Yep.
I hope this information has helped you, given a few ideas about introducing a giant character or giant race into your stories.
And these are an easy one, I think, to slip in, because it's not like the Chimera, which we'll talk about next episode. Basically, everyone in your audience goes, giant, right, I have an image of that in my head. I don't need a 3-page description in order to follow the plot.
So go out, create, have fun, put giants into your story, and always
write selfishly.
If you have a question or comment for our hosts or a topic you'd like us to cover, send us an email at writingroots@aspenhousepublishing.com or find us on Facebook by searching for Aspen House Publishing.
People constantly make pop culture references. That's why it's called popular culture, because people are aware of it and reference it constantly. Seth Rogen.
You're listening to Writing Roots, brought to you by Aspen House Publishing.
Welcome to Writing Roots. I'm Lee Hull.
And I'm Lee Esses.
Our question of the day is,
can I use names of copywritten material in my book? Quotes and songs, that kind of thing.
Yes and no.
Do not let your entire book be citing word for word Twilight. That's not going to fly.
That is copyright infringement. There are some things that you can do. We're going to talk today about the specifics. Break down what you can and can't do according to the law. Now, we are not lawyers. We are not copyright experts. If you have a question, if you're concerned about it, your best bet is to go to legal sources, not some random person on the internet who says that they know a lot about it.
So one of the questions you have to ask yourself is, do you plan on making any money with the writing? If it's fan fiction or something like that, you are not going to be allowed to make money with the writing. You can write all you want, but it's when money gets entered into the equation that these questions even come up. If you don't plan on selling your book ever, then just, you know, have fun.
Skip this episode and move on. It doesn't apply to you.
Right, selfishly.
First off, if it was written 95 years ago, so as of recording right now, if it was published before 1925, you're good to go. It's in the public domain.
What is public domain?
Public domain means that it was created so long ago that it now belongs to the public in general.
This is not to say that it's uncopywritten, because in a way it is, because you cannot take the Bible word for word and publish it and copyright it and then say no one else can write it. It is in public domain, meaning it's more or less the copyright is held by everybody. So if you're writing a fan fiction of the Canterbury Tales, where they finish the travels, go for it, have fun. But you aren't allowed to make money off of Harry Potter and J.K. Rowling's world that she's built, because that's hers. She owns the copyright. she's the one you need permission from and probably need to pay a lot of money to in order to create new content in that world.
Now, there is something to help you in this, and it's called fair use. Fair use allows the use of trademarks and certain copyrighted material under very specific circumstances. There's a couple of things that you need to consider before you can classify what you're using as fair use. I got this list from Standout Books. They're a publishing services company. And they list four things that you need to consider before you can consider your use of that copyright or trademark material under fair use. The very first is if you are using it in a commercial for-profit situation, or if it is educational and or valuable in some way to humankind as a whole. Valuable to you is not valuable as a whole.
That goes back to what we started the episode with. Are you making money on it? Because that needs to come into consideration.
You also need to consider the nature of the copyrighted work and what it is that you're referencing. You cannot take, like we said, the entire script of Twilight and publish it yourself. Because that goes into the next part, is the amount of text that you're referencing. A little bit here and a little bit there is fine. Entire chunks, not so much.
Yeah, I can't copyright the word the. That's too small of an amount to limit the rest of the world from using that particular tool in their storytelling.
And the final thing is you have to consider what the effect will be on the original copyrighted work in its potential market value, which is why you can't just republish something that somebody's already written, because that directly affects their potential in the market.
So if I have a character who's 11 years old and he has a lightning scar and he discovers he's a wizard, there's going to be some issues there. If I have a character who's 11 years old and he's riding a bicycle and he flips over the top of the bicycle and he goes face first into the gravel and he ends up with a lightning scar on his head and one of the friends goes, you look like Harry Potter. And that's the end of it. That is not impacting J.K. Rowling at all, because your characters are just making a pop culture reference.
So let's break down some more of the rules in fair use and go specifically into what can and can't be used. As I mentioned briefly, many of the rules depend on how much content you include. Having a single name, like Wonder Woman, doesn't really matter. If I include a scene from the new Wonder Woman movie, word for word, verbatim, there's going to be problems.
If you're writing a nonfiction, citing sources can get a little messy. Having that bibliography at the end should help, but
there is a fine line between citing a source and straight up plagiarism. You can cite a source, summarize, include a quote, make sure it's short, and you're fine. If you copy an entire page, if you copy even an entire paragraph, it starts to get sketchy.
A lot of that comes down to, are you claiming it as your own? If you are giving credit where credit is due, you can argue a reasonable effort. Again, consult your lawyer if this is where you are.
Especially if you are writing a nonfiction that is meant to be educational, you have a lot more freedoms under the fair use ability. Let's move on to songs.
Don't.
You can't just list the lyrics of a song. I don't care how important you think it is to your story. If it is a copyrighted song, you can't just list the lyrics and have it be part of your script. You can reference the song or the artist and say, that person is listening to this. For an example, John Green in the book Paper Towns had, they were shouting along to a song by the Mountain Goats. So they have this reference in there to a real band that made a real song, and that's okay, because it's a reference that directs the reader to that, and it doesn't take away somebody's ability to enjoy that song by the Mountain Goats.
Okay, we said never under any circumstances. If you have way too much money lying around, one, make sure you visit our Patreon page. And two, you can go to the artist and say, hey, do I have permission to use these particular lyrics and I'll pay you this much money? There are an enormous amount of other issues that come with that that I am not qualified to inform you on. It is physically possible, but...
yes, it's a lot easier to do small references. Now, we mentioned briefly earlier fan fictions. Fan fictions are a huge, huge source for how people get started writing.
I believe it was Neil Gaiman started with a Lovecraft-Sherlock Holmes fan fiction mashup thing.
Now, if you take a look at a book like Ready Player One, is that classified as a fan fiction? There's references and everything everywhere in there.
Not technically a fan fiction. They are really close to a lot of those lines, but the characters and the world are themselves.
Yes. And that is a very good example of this fair use idea where you can use pop culture references everywhere. Just like our quote at the beginning from Seth Rogen, pop culture references exist because people reference them everywhere. So it's totally plausible to have these references in your book without having to get permission from the author. You can't use their material exactly, but you can say she was in her Wonder Woman pajamas.
So I've seen Blue Harvest and I've seen Spaceballs. These are parodies, they're satires. Am I allowed to do that in my own writing?
Of course. According to the same website that I listed earlier, Standout Books, they say, quote, parody is only a legal defense if your parody is sufficiently transformative. So it has to be different enough. If you aren't changing the original base for your satire and parody enough, then you could be in serious trouble.
So what about people that actually exist? Can I say my main love interest looks like a beat-up Orlando Bloom?
Yes. The danger here is, yes, you can use names of real people, but you have to be careful of how you use them, because you can open yourself up to libel and defamation lawsuits if you are throwing these names under the bus. If they are a real person and you're accusing them of bad things, that's a really big problem.
Which is especially scary, not just for celebrities, but if you're writing an autobiography. You're much better off in not just referencing people, but everything, to make up a name that's similar and go with that.
And all you have to do in that case is at the beginning say some names, some circumstances have been changed to protect the privacy of those involved. So to kind of sum up what we've talked about in this episode, I know it's a lot of legalese that we just kind of threw at you. Yes, you can reference things. You can reference people, you can reference books, you can reference pop culture in general. That is perfectly okay. You cannot use entire characters, you can't use entire passages, you can't defame anything of a copyrighted work in your book if you're using it for profit.
But in the end, I just enjoy writing. I enjoy telling the story. I enjoy setting up the plot and putting my characters through terrible things. Because in the first draft, what I always do and what you should really do is just
write selfishly.
If you have a question or comment for our hosts or a topic you'd like us to cover, send us an email at writingroots@aspenhousepublishing.com or find us on Facebook by searching for Aspen House Publishing.
Moment in History by KCNR Radio. The first reference to Shasta was made in 1814 by British explorer and fur trapper Alexander Henry, who wrote about the Shasta tribe of Indians living on the mountain. Another version suggests that Shasta is a corruption of the Russian word Tashel, meaning white or pure mountain. Russian fur trappers were in the area from 1812 to 1842. In 1827, Hudson Bay's company brigade leader Peter Skeen Ogden wrote in his diary, "I have named this river Sastine River. There is a mountain equal in height to Mount Hood or Vancouver. I have named it Mount Sastine." In later years, the words Shasti, Sastis, Chasta, Chastala, Sasti, and Sasti, or several more, were used, all references to Mount Shasta. Mail to the early Shasta residents arrived addressed to Shasteya, Sasti, Sasta, and Shasti. This was contributed by Dottie Smith.
Wherever the art of medicine is loved, there is also a love of humanity. Hippocrates.
You're listening to Writing Roots, brought to you by Aspen House Publishing.
Welcome to Writing Roots. I'm Lee Hull.
And I'm Lee Esses.
Joining us today is Lorraine Woodworth, a nurse. Welcome, Lorraine.
How do you do? Nice to be here.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.
The best investment.